The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Now, I'm joined in the studio by Irish-American entrepreneur David McCourt, perhaps best known here as head of National Broadband Ireland, which we might touch on later. David, you're very welcome.
Clare, it's great to be on News Talk.
Thank you for joining us. Now, you are here just before America's 250th birthday because you've done your own deep dive into the United States in this new documentary, which is going to be broadcast on Sky on the 4th of July and available to stream afterwards. I watched it last night. I found it really thought-provoking, really interesting. It's great work. I mean, you went and spoke to a lot of people, you and your team. How many people did you speak to around the States?
Well, we've spoken to 5,000 now, but we cut this documentary after we'd spoken to 1,000. We stayed on the road talking to people because we wanted to see if anything has changed. And we're going to continue to talk to people. We have this ambition of a million voices. Now, obviously, we're not going to be able to talk to each one of those ourselves. We're going to have to get them to go on social media and download their own version of the American Dream. That's why we set up a ed250.com website so people can go online, press a button, record their own version of the American Dream. Mm-hmm. And I know we're in Ireland and I say the American Dream, but the issues that are putting cracks around the American Dream back in America will come this way if we don't patch those cracks. So it'll be the same in Ireland and England and the rest of Europe, the same fundamental issues that we're dealing with.
Yeah, these are big themes in this, and I want to make sure that we get to the heart of it. So what you do is you look at where you grew up, where your grandparents had their house, and you say, well, my grandfather was a janitor, and look at the house that he had and look at the life that he had. I mean, he was a hard worker. I'm sure it wasn't easy, but he could afford to have that nice home and that decent life. And the thesis is you can't do that now with a job like that.
Well, that's exactly right. You see, so my wife and I decided during COVID that we were going to produce this documentary. And originally it was going to be a different story. And then we said, let's start with something that everybody can relate to. So I started thinking about my grandfather. He came from Galway. He came to America at 16, uneducated. He worked as a janitor, so he cleaned toilets for a living. He raised my mom, and he owned his own home. He had his own backyard, and he died debt-free. So I said, can a custodian today do that? Can a policewoman or a policeman do that? Can a nurse do that? Can a fireman or woman do that? Can other service workers do that? And the facts are they can't. So the question really for us became, on our 250th birthday, is that really the America we want? Is that really the country we want to be proud of? A country where half the people don't get to own their own home? When it's fixable. It doesn't have to be that way. And it's sort of sad because when you own your own home, you feel part of the community, you contribute to the community, you feel like it's your community, you own a little tiny piece of it, it's your country, you own a tiny piece of it. And that ownership changes your view of your neighbors and your community. And it's been fundamental to America. You know, we gave away, you know, over 20% of America in the Homestead Act to people when you know, 250 years ago. So it's been fundamental in America. In America's, and then if you look at what do America's come up number one or two all the time when Gallup studies it, they're always number one or two on philanthropy. They're always number one or two on volunteering their time. They're always number one or two on helping strangers. So that goodness of America was the foundation of that was they were embedded in the community. They were volunteering in a community that they owned a piece of. They were helping neighbors in a community that they owned a piece of. And if you take that away, you know, what else is going to crumble? And that was the search we went on. Mm-hmm.
So I think there's two things that I suspect people are thinking here. First, what you're describing in America is happening here. You know, if you are a nurse or if you're a guard, it is really hard to have that life that you describe that is the dream life or the life that, you know, people expect.
A dignified life.
Dignified and expected life. The other thing that I think people might be thinking is, here's a very wealthy man telling us that people aren't earning enough money in service jobs. And maybe it's because of people like you that this has happened. And what do you say to that?
Yeah, okay, that's a fair comment. Not a fair criticism, but a fair comment. First of all, let's just look at our business in Ireland, National Broadband Ireland, where the employees have a pension, and we've given 200 grants out to rural Ireland. We started the RISE Foundation, right? I started the RISE Foundation to give grants to people in rural Ireland if they'll use technology to solve a social problem or create a job. So we are walking the walk and talking the talk that I'm speaking of here, number one. And we do the same in the States. But number two, and probably more important, if I wasn't a capitalist and I haven't been for the last 40 years in all these conversations and seen the change, I wouldn't be able to talk about it with some sense of, if I can use this word, authority. I've been there. You know, I've been to the mountain. I've seen it. I know what happens. Look, there's lots of problems in the States. We need election reform. We have health care is too expensive. We have too many guns. There's lots of problems. This one problem that you're talking about, Claire, is one I happen to know something about. So people should say, well, okay, he's talking about something that he actually knows something about.
And that problem is that corporate profits are increasing.
Well, the problem is a little bit more complex than that.
And wages are not keeping up. Well, I saw the stat in the documentary, isn't it? Corporate profits going up from 6% to 12%, and yet wages are going down.
Yes. Well, look, this problem has been around since the Industrial Revolution. And during the Industrial Revolution, Charles Dickens wrote a book called Hard Times, and it was actually brilliant because there was a scene in the book, if I remember it right, when the teacher said to someone in the class, if this classroom was a country and we had $50 million, would we be a wealthy and prosperous country? And Sissy, the person in the book, says, well, I can't answer that unless you tell me where the money goes and who gets the money. So the point that Charles Dickens was making during the Industrial Revolution was, a wealthy country has to be judged by more than just how much some people make. So that problem has been around for a long time. However, after World War II, when people were glad to be alive, the labor movement was strong, there was social reforms, there was broad-based wage growth, there was fabulous productivity, customers, communities, employees, and shareholders all shared. Maybe not to the same amount, but they all shared. After the early 70s, profits started to increase. Corporate taxes started going down. Corporate taxes were 52% in the 60s in America. Then they went to 46%, then they went to 34%. Now they're 21%. So in corporate taxes, as a bucket, was about 25 to 30% of all the tax in America. It's now 7 to 9%. So there's a combination of problems. One is corporate profits are up. Another is corporate tax revenue is down. Another is short-term thinking, which is probably the biggest evil. And another is the financialization of the world with globalization. With globalization, there was a decline of unions. There was a financialization of everything. People became economic units. And you know, one of the stories we tell in the film is a hospital in Wyoming that was bought by private equity. And, you know, someone said, hey, if we don't do these two things on column J, line item 21, and column B, line item 18, you know, if we don't do these two things, we'll make more revenue per doctor, more revenue per nurse, more revenue per customer, per patient, more revenue per square foot. Those two things, we're delivering babies and keeping the emergency room open after 5 p.m. So if you chop your finger off at 4:45, you're okay. If you chop your finger off at 5:15, you have to drive 20 miles down the road. Mm-hmm. So in the hospital I was born in, St. Elizabeth's Hospital, was built in 1862 for 150 years. It was nonprofit. It only did two things. It cured the sick and comforted the dying. That's all it did, nonprofit. It was bought by private equity for $243 million, that and a couple other hospitals. The real estate was sold for $1.2 billion, and the hospitals was left to go bankrupt. That's not me and my friends. That's not what every businessman does. That's what some do. That's not what everyone does.
But increasingly so, like that private equity model of going in and either asset stripping or trying to turn a quick buck so that you can pay back your investors. Are you saying that that model has resulted in a lot of these problems that we're seeing now in America and potentially spreading to this part of the world too?
Well, that short-termness, if that's a word, it is infiltrated everything in America and probably coming to Ireland as well. And in business, it's not good. In business, you need long-term investment and training of people. You need to give back to your community. You need training for your employees. And that short-term that you were talking about, that short-term version of private equity, where they go in and they extract a profit and they get in and out very quickly, that's not good. That's not good for them. And ultimately, it harms, if an economy without humanity ultimately harms all of us, the workers, the company, and society. So if your only objective is to extract profit, then that harms everyone. And that type of business should be nowhere near healthcare, for instance.
Mm-hmm. But how do you stop the train, you know?
Well, I think, Claire, there will come a point when people won't want to work for companies that only want to extract. If a company only wants to extract a profit and do nothing else, I think young people will, as they understand this issue, and that was the whole point of why, you know, my wife and I made this documentary, was to start a conversation. So it's our 250th anniversary, if you start counting when the Europeans showed up in America. I mean, there were people there for 3,000 years before that. So it's a little disrespectful to start counting at an arbitrary point, but that's a different story. But instead of just eating hamburgers and hot dogs and having fireworks, let's have a conversation of what we want America to look like over the next 250 years. The Haudenosaunee Indian Federation, which was on the East Coast where I grew up, of America, you used to have to describe to those were the indigenous people that were there when the Europeans showed up. You used to have to describe to the chief how every major decision would impact the seventh generation. So they had the long-term view. The indigenous people had a very, very long-term view. Americans have a very short-term view. And that short-term view in business is not good.
So you use the example of Amazon, and I see in the documentary the package arriving on the doorstep, and you say that, you know, we have to be prepared to go down and buy that in the local store in order for this to work, to garner a community once again. But that ship has sailed, surely.
Well, I guess I was trying to use that as an example to say we're all responsible, because if you let's go back to your comment about private equity. So where does private equity get their money? They get their money from pension funds. So it could be a teacher's union. It could be a police men and women's union. It could be a custodian union, if they still have one. Unions are dying, as you know, unfortunately. But they get that money, and that pension, person running that pension wants to make a good return. So they give it to someone who's making a great return, and they're saying, okay, give me the money back in 5 years. That private equity firm then invests the money, but they have to give it back. So they want to make a return as soon as they can and give the money back. So the person running the pension is part of the chain of guilt in there. So everybody is responsible for that short-term extraction model. And everyone has to understand how it works. And then I think, Claire, that young people won't want to go work for a company that only cares about short term. I mean, the reason...
Well, if they have a choice, they would.
Oh, that's a good point.
If they may not have a choice. I want to play people a clip from the documentary now. Let's take a listen, because the starting question, as we said, was, what does the American dream mean to you? What is the American dream? Does it still exist? Let's take a listen to what some people had to say.
I have to remain optimistic. I see all the feet on the ground today, and know that as the next generation comes to power, that things are going to get better.
Our kids seem to love everybody, They seem to not have the hate in their hearts. They seem to not be jaded. They have a future kind of lens. So to realize what a new American dream is, I think we need to look to our children a lot and our elders, of course.
We were always taught in school about the great American melting pot, that everyone comes here and we all become one in order to achieve a common goal. And I wish that I could still believe in that today.
This country was supposed to be the golden ticket for families that needed to get out of wherever they were, and it's gone now.
No, for me, the American dream is, it's been everything to me and my family. I'm an immigrant, you know, this country was built on the back of immigrants.
So I hear some of the positivity in there as well. And that was really heartening. You know, you mentioned the hospital in Wyoming, and then you had the community group that came together and unbelievably raised enough money to build a new hospital, which they're now running now. It is extraordinary. Did you find hope? Did you find much hope?
Huge hope. Americans are very hopeful. Now, underneath that hope, 80% of Americans have lost confidence in institutions, all institutions, church, Congress, Supreme Court, universities. So if they've lost faith in institutions and they can't afford a dignified life, eventually they will lose hope. But at this moment in time, Americans are still very, very hopeful. So we have to take advantage of that and fix these cracks. And people who know something about it have got to fix these cracks. You a minute ago, you said, well, how does a business guy that's been successful? Now, keep in mind, I started as a probation officer and I wanted to be a cop. So I've been very lucky. And you're right, I have been lucky, or I could be still walking a beat as a cop. But you have to get a politician in here to tell you how to fix the political system in America. You have to get a gun expert in here to tell you how to fix the guns. You have to get a healthcare expert in here in your radio station to tell you how to fix the healthcare problem. I'm just saying this is one issue that I know something about, and it needs to be fixed, because if we're only going to be worried about short term and we're going to make all people just economic units, and we're going to say the stock market is doing great, but we don't care about humanity, then ultimately that's going to harm us all.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the National Broadband Plan and National Broadband Ireland. It started not without controversy. We're a long way down the road now. What is happening with it? Where does it stand? What's the take up like?
Well, the take up is great in the DAs, the areas that we first built. It's up at 60%, and it's just going to keep on going. It's going to keep on, because it's critical infrastructure now. I was in Kilkenny last week. Kilkenny, we finished. That was the first county that we finished, and it was Longford and Westmeath were right behind that. Tipperary and Waterford and Meath will be right behind those. The take-up is doing great. We're ahead of schedule. We're on budget. We're delivering policy. And there was a great book written by Dr. Freiberg from Oxford, where he studied 22,000 public-private partnerships across 125 countries, and only one half of 1% of multi-billion-dollar public-private partnership can say that they're on time, on budget, delivering policy. So I'm incredibly proud. It's actually bittersweet that we're getting to the end, because I'm incredibly proud of the men and women of NBI. And there's no chance it would have got done if it hadn't been. We had a strong Secretary General, Mark Griffith, when we signed the contract. Mm-hmm. The Caron and Fergal, the two gentlemen that ran the contract for the department, were very, very strong. Those three people were incredibly strong.
And have you and the investors made a lot of money out of this plan?
We can't make, if you define, I don't know what a lot is. Have we got a return on our capital? Yes. If we get more than, I think it's 15%, we have to share it with the taxpayers. We have to share it with the government.
Because the taxpayer put a lot of money into this, yes. Like over $2 billion.
Yes, and then we have to put another $2.5 billion over the next 25 years. So we have to put, the government money is over, and we have to maintain it now for the next 25 years. So we'll have to put another $2.5 billion in. Roughly, the numbers are the government put in a little less than $2.5 billion, and we have to put in approximately $2.5 billion over the 25 years to maintain it and continue to connect people and continue to upgrade the network. So their money was first. You're absolutely right. So that's why the government negotiated in the contract a profit sharing where we'd share with them if we made, quote unquote, a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Which is over 15%, which is a great return, right?
Sure.
15% is like you describe in the
documentary. It's a fair return. Absolutely a fair return. Mm-hmm. Absolutely a fair return. Now, if we lose money, they don't have to give us any more money.
Okay.
So if we lose 15%, they don't have
but
to share.
But that's not going to happen. I mean, you know that now at this stage, right?
Well, we didn't know that at the beginning.
Yes.
Otherwise, there would have been 100 people that would have signed the contract. There's a reason why it was so hard to get it done. It wasn't clear. You know, we managed our material costs during COVID. The men and women of NBI managed that. They were very creative in where they bought the materials during COVID when you couldn't get anything. They worked Saturdays and Sundays to get this built on time. They were, and if they hadn't done that, if this contract had taken, like most public-private partnerships, and taken 2 extra years, we would have lost $1 billion.
Now, come back to Amerigo.
Just to get your head around that, we would have lost $1 billion.
Look, business is always a risk, isn't it? And that's why some people do it and some people don't. Coming back to Amerigo, because I don't think I've mentioned the name of the documentary. It's called Amerigo. It's on Sky on the 4th of July. What is your hope? Like, what did you set out to achieve?
We set out to achieve a conversation. We're hopeful that this documentary will do two things. It will get people talking, and it'll help people understand what they should be talking about. What are the issues that we need to solve? Because if you look at the issues that America is facing now, it's like a big algebra problem, which is, if you ever took algebra, when you first look at the problem, it's impossible. And when you break it in little pieces, it's okay. America's problems look really difficult to solve, but if you break them into little pieces, they're not that difficult. So we're hoping two things will happen. One, people will start to understand the issues. And two, they'll start to have a conversation about solutions instead of fighting. Right now, every time you turn the news on, there's this far, far left. You saw the most capitalist city in the world, New York, elected a socialist mayor. The most capitalist city in the world, New York, just nominated two socialist mayor and just nominated two socialist congressmen and women.
And then you have your president.
And then we have our president on the way other side of the spectrum. But neither of those far left or far right groups are going to solve the problem. We need not a radical left or a radical right. We need a radical middle. A radical middle that says, I understand these issues and I'm not going to accept all this craziness. We're going to solve these problems one at a time. That's what I hope happens.
David, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank
David
you
McCourt,
for having
Amerigo
me.
Is on Sky from the 4th of July. Back after this quick break.
The Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.